we agree. One term of absolute reality is namatatu and rupatatu, citta, cetasika, and rupa only. So the panya is the reality which understands. Any moment when there is understanding, no body. So there must be citta with cetasika, with panya cetasika. Mm-hmm. So the purpose of studying is...
Oh, you're asking me?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
To recognize realities as they are.
Yeah.
Truly.
At this moment.
At this moment.
Yeah. Which are namatatu and rupatatu. And what's the way to develop understanding? Because it's impossible just to go instantly to experience the arising and falling away. So it has to develop from moment to moment.
That's very important at the later stages of bhavana, but the first and most important things to establish are dana, sila, and then bhavana. Because without those foundations, there's no possibility, in my opinion, very, very difficult possibility for the arising of right understanding in daily life and in seated meditation.
Yeah, but can we set any rule? For example, if people just have dana without understanding or sila without understanding, how can they develop bhavana? Because we're talking about experiencing reality of this moment.
They can't develop panya at that moment. However, they can accumulate merit.
You see that those who accumulate merits may not know anything about realities at all, but those who know can develop, but not at will.
Right.
So by hearing about this moment more and more, there can be even more understanding right now at the moment of hearing mm-hmm. about this moment. So we should have more and more understanding of nama and rupa.
I do not deny that, and I do not disagree with that even a little bit. However, I still believe very important that before that kind of practice can become fruitful, there must be the foundation for it. In other words, if there are too many hindrances in the mind, it's very, very difficult for true panya to arise. If one is in a fight with someone, if one is having many mental afflictions, then it's very difficult for wisdom to have the appropriate conditions.
What is your understanding of no self?
Well, I call it emptiness, but the basis of emptiness is that nothing exists by way of its own entity. Nothing has absolute core. Nothing has intrinsic existence. And the fact is that emptiness is the flip side of dependent origination, meaning that all composed phenomena are empty of true nature, true self nature.
But if you say that there is nothing, right?
I'm not saying there's nothing.
So that is?
I'm saying there's no core. There's no substantial entity to any composed phenomena. For example, if we take a look at this microphone here, this microphone is merely a mental imputation. If a dog were to come into the room and look at this, the dog might think, oh, this is a stick to bite onto. In other words, the idea of a microphone is merely a panyati or a concept.
But you agree previously that there are citta, cetasika, and rupa as absolute realities?
Absolute realities in a conventional sense.
What do you mean by conventional? what do you mean?
It almost sounds like a contradiction of terms. In terms of the way of describing it, the only absolute reality, by my definition, would be Nibbana, which is...
But who experiences Nibbana?
There is no self that experiences
So what
Nibbana.
Experiences?
There
no
are,
self, but what
there
experiences?
There is a collection of conditions, the five...
So khandas. There must be Panya, which is Lokuttara, which can experience Nibbana. Ignorance cannot...
Well, it's labeled panya. It's labeled the conditions, but there's no absolute entity there that actually is a self.
No self. We agree that there is no self, yes. That there are citta, cetasika, and rupa. And we must be precise, because when one says that the purpose of studying is to experience Nibbana, what experience Nibbana must not be I, but must be panya, which is developed to the degree that it can experience Nibbana. Right?
How can anything experience Nibbana with Nibbana has no marks or signs?
But when one says that one would like to reach, to attain Nibbana, there must be the right understanding of what Nibbana is. Otherwise, how can we attain Nibbana?
But how can we say what Nibbana is?
Now, Nibbana does not appear right now at all, right? While they're seeing, whisper object is seen, hearing sound is heard. So we're talking about reality in order to see that if there is still attachment to the conditioned realities, it's impossible to attain or to experience Nibbana.
Yes, agreed.
So, and this must be developed. The panya, right? Understanding.
Yes. Yes.
So at moment of attaining or experiencing Nibbana, there must be a reality which knows what Nibbana is. Otherwise, how can one realize that that is Nibbana?
But how can there be anything which knows what Nibbana is, given that Nibbana is absence of all marks?
If there is no understanding of this moment, it's impossible to understand Nibbana. Because how can there be the understanding of Nibbana while Nibbana does not appear, but there can be the development of understanding reality which appears?
What is your understanding of Nibbana? Is Nibbana a thing?
Opposite of citta, cetasika, and rupa, Nibbana has no conditions to arise.
Okay, so then if there are no conditions for Nibbana to arise, then how can Nibbana be experienced?
By panya. Only by panya, by Buddha himself first. Buddha experienced Nibbana, so he taught his disciples to develop panya to experience Nibbana. Otherwise, without his teaching, how can we have heard about the word Nibbana?
But when you say panya experiences Nibbana, is panya real? Does panya exist?
Citta is real. Cetasika is real. Rupa is real. Because without citta, cetasika, rupa, there is nothing now.
But citta is real, but no self, yeah?
Citta is an element which can experience an object. Its faculty is to experience an object right now. The object which is seen by citta, which can experience the different degrees of visible object which appear now.
But as far as I'm thinking, citta even does not exist ultimately.
But who is speaking?
There's a collection of parts.
Citta and cetasika, the rupa cannot speak.
Correct.
So it must be the citta and cetasika only.
I would agree only as far as citta being a reality in the sense that one can say it is a conditioned reality.
Yes, it is conditioned,
Okay. Because if one were to say citta is an absolute unconditioned reality,
no,
then I
not
would have
unconditioned,
to disagree.
Not unconditioned.
Okay.
Conditioned
okay.
reality.
Okay.
So panya is panya.
So what is panya other than the absence of the defilements of lobha, dosa, moha?
At moment of being fast asleep, is there panya?
No.
At that moment, there is no lobha, dosa, moha, and no panya.
There is moha always.
Not all the time. When we talk about akusala, there are three stages of akusala, not only one.
Okay.
So while one is fast asleep and that person is not an arahata, there is the latent tendency of avicca. But
that
avicca cetasika or moha cetasika does not arise while one is fast asleep. It doesn't perform the function of avicca.
Aha, okay, I see the distinction now. Okay, because my understanding is that avicca is always present until one is arahata.
No. That's why we should understand each moment very precisely. The moment of being fast asleep is moment from seeing and hearing. It's not the same moment of developing understanding either.
But wait a second now. You say there is no avijja in the moment of sleeping.
No akusala cetasika at all. Because the birth consciousness to be born as a human being must have the wholesome cetasikas arising with birth consciousness.
Okay, so we're talking dabanga citta here. Okay. But for there to be a composed entity called sentient being, by definition, there must be avijja. Avijja, it must always exist unless one is arahat.
Once you study Abhidhamma, you come to know that there are only the seven universal cetasikas, one of which is not moha.
The sabachita satarana cetasikas.
Whatever, right? So I understand what you're saying because through different approaches, there are teachings which say that we are born with moha. And we have moha all the time. But once you come to know that moha also arises because of conditions, it's only at the time when you ignore the reality.
Even avijja arises because of conditions.
Moha and avijja is the same, right?
No, there can be distinctions, can't there?
Different terms, but same reality. The nature which cannot understand reality as it is.
As it is, but by definition, unless one is in the moment of magga or pala, or arahat, then there is wrong understanding of realities at some level.
Wrong understanding does not arise all the time either.
It can be just latent tendencies.
Anusya, yeah, or anusaya, how do you pronounce?
Anusya.
Anusya tendencies.
They're not active. They're the citta, but they're not active.
But nonetheless, they are present.
Of course.
Okay, so this is the distinction I'm trying to...
But it's not active that time.
avijja is not just there doing nothing.
But avijja, is conditioning every single limb of the 12 limbs of dependent origination at all times.
When? Not all the time. When?
When? So long
when
as one is not an arahat.
No.
Yeah,
when
it produces results.
When citta is akusala and wholesome only.
Then we may disagree on that.
When citta is kusala, there must also be the latent tendency of avijja, but avijja cetasika does not arise.
Okay, so you're talking avijja cetasika.
Right.
I'm talking avijja in a more specific sense related to the fact that being a produced entity as a sentient being, there must be avijja there, because without avijja there's no sankara.
As what? What produces this thing? If it's not cetasika, what reality is it?
Well, I haven't studied the Abhidharma's interpretation of this enough to
right,
be able
so
to...
Right, so there are how many Paramattha Dhamma?
Four.
Right, so which one is avijja?
Avijja would be cetasika, I guess, right?
Yeah, what did you say just now?
I mean, it's a citta cetasika rupa nibbana, yeah?
Right, so avijja is?
According to that definition, avijja would probably be cetasika.
This is the Buddha's definition, not ours.
Okay, okay.
Right, so...
Okay, okay, well...
I'd just like to... Pause a moment, Khunsu Chin, this is Bruce, and Bruce lives in Japan and he's here to visit. Anything you would like to say to introduce yourself or to say why you're here?
I was subscribed to an internet discussion list and I saw Robert's answers to some questions. And I asked a question about something that he thought it would be better to ask the question on the Dhamma study group list. And he invited me over to the Dhamma study group list. And from there, I found Nina's translation of the Survey of Paramattha Dhamma. And I read that and I thought, oh, this is very, very interesting. I must find out more about this. So I'm trying to find out more about this. And that's all.
In what way is citta devoid of self?
Who's citta?
Citta in general.
Who's
because
citta?
We say because
who's
we say
citta
who's
citta is devoid of self.
I don't know if that's a relevant question.
We are learning about reality which arises and falls away every moment.
Mm-hmm.
To really understand the nature of the moment as it is. For example, citta is not cetasika.
Mm-hmm.
And cetasika is not citta. So citta is a reality which is not wrong understanding.
Well, we can say that experience happens. To deny experience would be silly. So in that way, I would agree. But I'm just trying to understand how your interpretation is of citta, because and there are many, many debates.
Yes, what about the experiencing of this moment? For example, do you feel somewhere hard?
Well, I mean,
yeah.
There's hardness.
Yeah,
there's,
okay,
there's,
okay, okay. What experiences hardness?
That is citta.
You call it citta,
right? I label it citta.
Even we don't call it citta, there is a reality which can experience hardness.
It's a conventional reality.
No, not conventional. Hardness, you don't have to say that it's hard. Not necessary.
The distinction I'm trying to get at is even those are anatta.
And all dhammas are anatta.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to understand why they're phrased in such a way, like absolute realities, because I will tell you why. In many debates, there has been enormous confusion on these particular points, and in fact, in the Tibetan presentation, one of the very strong criticisms they make is against early Abhidhamma scholars, not here, for example, who believe that Paramattha Dhammas exist with self, with atta, that citta is atta, that cetasika is atta, and so on and so forth. This is what I was trying to get at. I mean, why do we want to understand hardness? Why do we want to understand blueness? Why do we want to understand...
Because that's the only reality.
Because that's the only... That's another concept, Sukhan. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, the hardness, when you experience... I'm talking about the experience of it.
Okay.
That's the only reality.
But what... Right. I guess the point I'm trying to drive at is why do we want to study these Paramattha Dhammas? Why do we want to
Because
understand...
you cannot deal with concepts. You cannot live in the world of concepts.
Exactly. Exactly. And how can nibbana possibly arise when there's any kind of mental fabrication? Impossible.
There are paramattha dhammas and there are paññatti, the four paramattha dhammas, and then there is conceptualization. How do we know the difference? Or how can paññā arise to know the difference between paññatti and paramattha dhammas? Is it necessary to know,
yeah,
actually?
At moment of seeing, is there paññatti or just visible object which appears?
Just visual object which appears at a moment.
So one say that one lives in the world of concept, or one lives in the world of Paramatta Dhamma with understanding Paramatta Dhamma as Paramatta Dhamma. Without Paramatta Dhamma, everyone knows that there wouldn't be concept at all. Without citta, cetasika, no thinking.
But even with panya, there are still concepts. So it's not as though the problem is the concepts, but the problem is not understanding the difference between the realities and concepts.
Well, I disagree on a very specific point, in the sense that there must be at some point an end of fabrications for nibbana. At some point there has to be the release of notions of self. Other ways are to...
Question. When you say the release of the notion of self, do you mean not clinging to it, or do you mean its disappearance?
Relinquishing all views.
Relinquishing.
The end of all fabrications, papancha.
But would there still not be a concept of table and day and week and all these concepts?
One can have those concepts without clinging to them as well.
So it's the release of the clinging.
Yes.
So if there is understanding,
yes,
there is no clinging. It's very tempting to think about what happens at Nibbana, but it's not really particularly helpful, perhaps, in understanding how to get to Nibbana. A lot of people start say, this is what happens at Nibbana, therefore, what I need to do right now is blah, blah, blah.
No, you're absolutely right.
I feel that is not how the Buddha explained it at all.